Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's time for spring cleaning, but that doesn't just mean cleaning out your closets and reorganizing your junk drawer. It can mean getting your financial house in order, and it can mean decluttering your mind. Through this hour, we get ideas and suggestions from experts who work with individuals in each of those areas, but it all seems to begin with becoming mentally healthy, clearing away the cobwebs of the mind so that you can get yourself in order and be ready to tackle putting your finances in ship shape as well as the physical space around you. We're joined by Lori Martin. She is a certified professional organizer and owner of Simplicity Organizers and the executive director of Simplicity Serves. That's a nonprofit offering complimentary organizing services to other nonprofits and schools and families in crisis. She joins us along with Pam Horak, who dubs herself your financial mom. She is a certified financial planner and owner of Pathfinder Planning, LLC. And Juliet Kuhn Lee is a board-certified licensed therapist and owner and founder of Sun Counseling and Wellness. Welcome to you all. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Please don't look at my desk. It's embarrassing.
That never happened before.
Okay. Juliet, I'm going to start with you because it seems to me to launch into any new daunting task, whether it's physically organizing your closets or your home or this desk or during spring cleaning or getting your finances in order to take stock of what's behind and what's coming up this year, that thinking clearly might be the first step to being successful at both those efforts. Is there such a thing as spring cleaning for the mind, for your mental health?
Of course. Does that sound a little daunting? But yes, our environment and our mental state are deeply connected. And so when we clear physical space, we're also creating conditions for our mental clarity, and it can go both ways. We really love, you know, a fresh start. That's why we like things like New Year's and, you know, spring. And it's actually in psychology called the fresh start effect, where our brains use these temporal landmarks, if you will, to create this like mental separation between what feels like past self and future self. So with this shift in the season, so it's spring, so we feel like there's this gap where we can begin again. And so we are more likely, research shows that we are more likely to pursue goals or things like, you know, cleaning our space and doing all of this after these types of transitions, because there's just this almost permission we give ourselves to release ourselves into that. And then there's stuff going on physiologically and biologically with more sunlight that helps our mood and motivation and so forth. So we do tend to feel this pull in spring to reset.
And I'm just going to ask about the word reset. That's what it is. It's not a remaking of yourself. It's just a new starting point.
Yeah, it's an important distinction because, you know, every day you actually have the choice and the capacity to reset and restart. So, you know, what we see in therapy is a lot of people think it is going to be, you know, I'm brand new. And that's really an overwhelming, intimidating kind of ask. So, yeah, a reset is just a clearing out. What do I want to have things look like and feel like moving forward? And also there's benefits, you know, for our nervous systems and our brains to move from, you know, past to new. So, you know, clearing out is not just like satisfying. It's actually allowing our brain to downshift.
On your website, which is called Yep, I Go to Therapy.
Loud and proud.
You say that, quote, therapy isn't just for crisis. It's for growth, maintenance, and self-awareness, and more. But do you need therapy to achieve those things, or can you clear the cobwebs on your own?
Okay, well, obviously, I'm pretty biased. You know, I'm a therapist who's gone to therapy most of my life. And I think, you know, we're wired to connect and have that accountability with others. So it's certainly helpful to have that partnership. And some people, it's not just as easy as saying, I'm going to declutter. I'm going to, you know, remove these cobwebs. There are actually, you know, mental barriers to achieving that. So it's a little bit individualized and nuanced, but recognizing as the first step that there is an emotional component to decluttering that we really don't talk about enough. So you can actually end up perpetuating kind of some shame or blame if you're, you know, like, why can't I get myself to go through this closet? You know, and sometimes it's deep for people. It might mean, you know, encountering your past and seeing objects that bring up emotions for you or old versions of yourself, old grief. So if something like that comes up, that's real emotional work. It's not just, you know, tidying up.
We're going to talk to Laurie Martin about actually how to do that, how to accomplish that task of going through things that maybe you're clinging onto that you shouldn't. But talk to me before we do that, Juliet, about whatever mental impact being surrounded by clutter may or may not have. Perhaps the clutter emanates from mental health issues. Perhaps it's affecting you mentally. Which way is it?
Right, a little chicken or the egg. Again, kind of depends, but it is a mental load. And I think about it like kind of having tabs open in your brain. All, you know, 47 tabs are open. That's sort of the mental clutter, or the physical clutter that can do that for us as we're, you know, witnessing it, as we're seeing it. So it's not just about having too much stuff. It's representative of things like, you know, that invisible cognitive load that we carry around managing our life and remembering things and planning things and tracking and deciding. So if every item in your space doesn't have a clear purpose or place, it actually is adding to that load. And so again, if you think about it, like open tabs on your browser, each one is like running in the background. It uses memory, slows everything down, and clutter works the same way on your brain. So you might not consciously be thinking about that pile on the kitchen counter, but your brain registers it every time you walk by. And so what's happening physiologically too is that research shows that those of us with cluttered homes have higher levels of cortisol. And that's our primary stress hormone. And so it's not just annoying, it's like actually physiological, but physiologically stressful. It keeps our nervous systems in a more hypervigilant state. And you know, we're already living that way in 2026 with constant input as well, you know, since on all of our senses. So it's definitely not helping to be in a cluttered space.
Laurie Martin's here. She's a certified professional organizer, owner of Simplicity Organizing, and you are the physical space declutterer expert on the program. The term spring cleaning is not just something we made up today or yesterday or last year or in the last decade. It's something that human beings have been actually doing since almost the beginning of time. Spring is the time of year when you open the windows and clean out the house, because back in the day when we had wood-burning fires and you'd keep the windows closed in the wintertime, it would build up and you needed to clean all that stuff out. So we've continued to do that, but now we look at it as getting a fresh start on things. But wouldn't it be easier if we just did a little bit all the time, every day, every week, so we didn't have to face this big task every spring?
Absolutely.
That's
You nailed it. You nailed it.
the
Yes. Get it together, people. That's
answer.
the
What's easy to keep up, right?
So here's the really basic question, I guess, Laurie, when it comes to physically decluttering your environment, where do you begin?
By taking a deep breath. You really have to take a step back and say, what, you know, it is a lot. Most of this is mental, and kind of like we were talking about, resetting yourself of how do you want your home to look and feel, and what's working well, what's not working well. And ultimately, the less we have, the less there is to maintain, and the less overwhelmed you will feel. So think how you feel when you walk into a hotel room, how good that feels. There's just not a lot of stuff, and it feels really nice. You open up, everything about you opens up, and it feels really freeing. You can think, you can process. And as Juliet was saying, you know, just even walking by the stuff in your house, it does constantly impact your brain. And we live in a world that is inundated with stuff, and we can order it and it can be here on Amazon within hours. And so kind of being aware of what are we bringing into our house that is really starting to fill things up, because the more we have, the more we have to maintain it. And that's true with children especially. And that spring kind of clean and reset, this is a great time, but as we were saying before, having that, you know, staying on top of it as a family at night, it is so helpful for us to put things away every single night before we go to bed, so that when we start the next morning, it's a fresh start, and
let's say we don't do that. Let's say we have a cluttered closet that we've been collecting things in. I probably have shirts in my closet that I don't wear anymore because I can't. They're out of style or I don't fit in them, but they're perfectly good. Why would I throw them away? That's my thought process. So let's say you have a cluttered closet. You have a junk drawer that's full of stuff. You have a pantry that you haven't emptied since Thanksgiving with food that's probably going to, maybe Thanksgiving of 2025. You're never going to use it. And some of that stuff is out of date. You got all these tasks facing you. You have a cluttered attic. Where do you start?
I say start at the smallest place. The smallest place. A junk drawer is a great place. When you pull everything out, yes, it kind of grows, but once you can tackle one space, you feel that success. So success breeds success. And when you know that you can accomplish a junk drawer, then that's a great launch into maybe a smaller closet. Or maybe then you go to your primary closet. But when you're organizing a space, the key is to pull everything out of that space. So you've got to have the time to be able to tackle that space. So when you pull everything out and you go through it, you make decisions differently when they're outside the space that they're in. So if we're going to help you with your closet, we're going to pull everything out of your closet. And I guarantee you'll make decisions differently than if you were to stay in your closet and make the decisions on whether you're wearing it or not.
And you have said when it comes to tackling closets, not only do you pull everything out of the closet, you put it in a separate room.
You do.
Then what?
We're going to group like items together. So we're going to get all of your pants together. We're going to even color coordinate them so you can actually see you have 7 pairs of black pants, or you have 14 pairs of jeans, or maybe you have, I pulled athletic shorts out of my husband's drawer. And I said, do you know you have 13 of the same shorts? And he said, I actually had no idea. So I said, why don't you pick 5 and let's return the rest back to school where you work. But they gradually kept coming in, but he didn't realize that till we pulled it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you got a cluttered house or you just have cluttered rooms in it and it's getting in your way, Juliet, some people have said that cleaning is therapeutic. Is it?
Oh, certainly. Again, because you're reducing that mental input and that load. So we've established, you walk into a cluttered room, your brain does a quicksand scan, it registers disorder. That's triggering a real stress response. So if we take care of that, you know, of course we're reducing that. And as Lori was talking, I was thinking about just like the, you know, even as she's describing that, I'm like, God, I'm not going to go into my closet and take everything out and put it in the guest room. I'm just not, which is where somebody like her comes in again with that accountability. Mm-hmm. But I think about that like procrastination too, that most of us, that's not just laziness. It's actually, you know, our nervous system saying like, I don't have the capacity for this right now. Because procrastination around things like clutter is often a symptom of an already overwhelmed system. So it requires a lot of decision-making. And y'all, I'm like, decision fatigue is real. So it's just another, you know, I'll just keep all the black pants. That's just easier sometimes.
Yes. I mean, it's stressful perhaps to be surrounded by clutter. You'd love to clean it out and you're feeling guilty now because you're hearing this conversation. But then you have all these decisions you have to make. That's even more stressful. Why bother?
I know. Especially, I mean, most of us, our mental bandwidth is already pretty low right now. So avoidance is easier. So you kind of have to think about like that future self though. I mean, that's kind of what I use with clients. Like, what's your future self? How's it going to feel?
We'll talk more about that when we come back, and we'll hear from Pam Horak about getting your finances in order. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about spring cleaning, your physical space, your mind, and your money. Juliet Kuhn Lee is with us. She's a board certified licensed therapist with Sun Counseling and Wellness. Pam Horak is your financial mom. We're about to talk to her. She's a certified financial planner, owner of Pathfinder Planning LLC. And Laurie Martin is here, certified professional organizer and owner of Simplicity Organizers. Pam, it's coming up on April. It's the 24th of March. April 15th is tax day. Everybody kind of has to go through their finances around this time of year to get their taxes done and ready for the IRS and the state. Should the taking stock that we go through at tax time be something that we do all year long?
It absolutely is. And you are spot on. This is the time when people are really thinking about their money because they have to do the taxes and pay their taxes. And or maybe they're getting a refund back. So maybe they're excited about it. That could be the case, too. But it's one of those things. And I love that Juliet and Lori are here talking about these very same things, because it's all very emotional. The money that people deal with is so emotional. People will tell you they have a money problem, but they really don't. It's really something deeper than that. So yes, putting together your taxes is it's definitely challenging when you're going back through the whole year and scrambling and trying to find this document or that document or the other document. So it's so much better. We always encourage our clients, you really need two files, and that's kind of it. You need one file that you keep all your medical items in, all the, you know, the bills, the things you pay, whatever. Keep that in one file just in case you have enough to deduct, because sometimes that's a possibility. And everything else goes in the other file. So throughout the year, as you pay taxes on your cars or your boat or your motorcycle or whatever it is, or if you send donations to a charity or donate physical items, you just throw all of that into another folder. And then at tax time, you know, you're going to get all of your other documents either in the mail or online. And then you have this, you know, two file system. So you have everything kind of organized and ready to go for your taxes. So that makes it a little bit easier.
I was going to say, is that the secret to making it simpler, just to have two files? And why is medical the only one you'd have a separate file for?
Because there's so much of it. There's, I know our listeners can't see, you know, but there's this big, huge stack of medical bills that we get in the mail. Sometimes we have to pay them. Sometimes it's just a, you know, reminder of how much you didn't pay. And then the medical math in itself is a whole nother show. But yeah, keeping that can be very helpful, particularly if you are paying your own insurance, because you can deduct that if it's over a certain amount. So it's worth saving some years.
Another aspect of I guess, the clutter created by our financial lives is hanging on to all the things you have to get together to file your 1040 or your state forms. Some of those things you have to hold on to the supporting documentation in case you're audited. How long do you have to hang on to that stuff?
That's a great question. And as with everything financial, the answer is it depends, right? So the rule of thumb is about 7 years. After 7 years, the IRS really isn't going to come back to you for anything. So keep your taxes and all that supporting documentation for 7 years. Otherwise, if you have like very simple stuff, if you're young, there's nothing more than really a W-2 and a couple other things, maybe 3 years is probably the most you need to keep that. But 7 years, definitely to be safe.
And now that we have the ability to scan things in and keep them digitally, is there any reason, if you have a scanner and you do that and you put them in a digital file and save it hopefully in the cloud, so if your house burns down, you still have access to it, is there any reason to keep the paper at all?
I don't think so. You could keep 3 years worth of paper if you wanted to, and then the other seven, you know, up to 7 years, you can discard that, shred that for sure. But keeping everything digitally does kind of remove a lot of the mess and the clutter. And I know it is hard for people to get rid of their taxes. It's hard for me to get rid of the paper around the taxes. So it's definitely something you can keep in the cloud, but if you can shred it, then do. And there's actually some, you can look online and there are free places you can take your shred, which is really nice. So if you've got like years and years in your garage, you know, take them to one of these free shredding events and just get rid of them, get them out of your house.
Lori, years ago when I bought a desk, I bought a credenza, and there are four big file drawers in that credenza, and they are stuffed to the gills. And the problem is nothing else will go in them.
That's when you stop filing and you start filing.
The other problem is I never open the drawers because there's no reason to. I read that some decluttering experts say never buy a file cabinet because most of what goes in never comes out. Where do you stand?
I file. I do. But the key is you got to have the space to file. Because if you don't have any, if you're out of space, you're going to just start piling up on your desk. And that's when it starts to get out of control again. Mm-hmm. So there's really only three decisions that you're making. You're either, it's an action item, you need to act on it. You can file it if you need to keep it, or toss it, shred it, let it go. And it all starts with how it comes in from the mailbox. And I encourage all clients and listeners to let the paper go as much as possible before it even lands on your desk or in your office. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and recycle the junk mail, stand over your recycling bin as soon as it comes in, so that you can really probably eliminate it down to, you know, eliminate 90% of it, maybe 98% of it. And you're just bringing into that space the one piece of paper that you need.
You know, some people may every year dive into this spring cleaning activity, Juliet, but then they stop before they're finished, because either the task is so overwhelming that they get bored with it, or it's just too much to deal with mentally, or because, we'll get to it later. They procrastinate. If you find yourself procrastinating, are there tools to make yourself move on?
I think understanding what's causing someone to avoid, because often avoidance, there is a piece that goes deeper. So maybe it is like the stuff we're putting off dealing with is stuff that we actually have feelings about, you know. Sometimes it's clothes from a body we used to have, items from someone we've lost, or just, you know, so it can be, again, as deep as like avoiding grief underneath something. I think about how if we're depleted, that's not the time to start decluttering. Again, we've talked about like how emotionally activating it all is. So really, as Lori said, like starting with a deep breath is really about us being able to reset our nervous systems and come into it in a more regulated space. And we're much more likely to follow through at that point. And our decisions will be clearer and cleaner and better. So sometimes, you know, some practical strategies is we can do what's called a brain dump, a mind dump. So before you even touch a single physical item, just getting a piece of paper that you'll throw away or shred later, and write down everything that's taking up that mental space, like everything that is in those mental tabs, worries, to-dos, unfinished conversations, whatever it is, and just getting it out of your head and onto paper. The research shows that clears cognitive bandwidth, so then we can focus. So that can be something that helps propel you into some of the rules that Lori talked about, like starting in a small space, one session, just pick one drawer, one shelf, and that's your entire job for that session. Because that's so powerful to, like she said, have that win. And your brain needs those wins to decide if it's going to keep going.
Pam, everything is more expensive than it used to be. It continues to get more expensive when we are in this period of time politically where chaos is infiltrating financial situations and markets and things like that. So this spring cleaning and getting your financial house in order seems to be more important than ever, to see where you are first and where you like to go, where you'd like to go, and then how to get there. If you are procrastinating when it comes to making that financial plan, should you be more motivated to do that in these trying times?
You should always be motivated to do that. Yes. I do see a lot of that when people see a lot of volatility in the markets, when they hear, you know, everything going on in the news, they get afraid. It affects people's mental state very, very much. COVID was a huge mental challenge for people, and it affects their finances. So it's so important for people to do exactly what you said. Take stock, take inventory of what you have and what your financial life looks like. Figure out what your goals are and where do you want to go? You know, when do you want to retire? What about the kids' education? How am I going to take care of the parents while I'm figuring out my day-to-day spending even? And then come up with a plan and a direction for how to do all that. And you have to take time to prioritize some of those goals. You can't do them all. Sometimes, you know, like Lori just said, Lori and Juliet is both, you know, start with something small. And sometimes the smallest thing is really the most foundational thing, and that's getting your budget in order. I know people don't like the word budget. They think that's like a, you know, big, horrible word, but it's really not. A budget is nothing more than a tool. And we like to look at it as a forward-looking tool. It's not backward looking. A lot of the apps and the things that are out there right now are not budgeting. I don't feel like they're budgeting. I feel like they're expense trackers. Mm-hmm. And when you set a goal for yourself and you say, okay, I'm only going to spend $800 on groceries this month. And you look back at your expense tracker and it says you spent $950 on groceries. That's very deflating. It's like, oh, I didn't do it again this month. And so after a while, you don't want to do it anymore. You don't want to track it anymore. And your entire budget falls apart because it was never really a budget in the first place.
So what is the rule of thumb? What should you do in those situations? If you're really trying to keep track of your money so that you can build wealth into the future and so that you can afford that trip to Disney World, so that you can send the kids to college, so that you can retire at 65 and be comfortable, how should you conduct your financial life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. I think the thing to do is start with what we do in our budgeting. We take somebody's take-home income, that's the right word. We find their take-home income because that's what they have to actually spend and work with. And from there, we do a little forward-looking exercise. You know, what do you want to spend or what do you want to save for? What are those goals you want to save for? Do you want to save for travel? Do you want to save for summer camp? Do you need to save for your car and your home and things like that? I think that Lori just mentioned that. The more things you have, the more things you have to maintain. And if you're going to maintain something, you have to have money for it. So you have to set aside, I call it upkeep funds, for those type of things so you can maintain them. Then we look at fixed expenses, and that is a little bit of a backwards looking exercise because you've got to go and find all of those expenses and where the money's going. And then it's forward looking again. It's okay, what are the day-to-day expenses? What is the gas and the groceries and, you know, getting your hair done and the kids' soccer, you know, uniform and things like that. So it's an exercise of going through those. And then invariably, the income is not as much as all the outflow, right? So we have to go and work backwards. So we look at the spending. Is there anything here we can cut? Is there anything we can back off of? Okay, let's look at the fixed expenses. Is there anything here we really don't need? Are we spending extra money on you know, apps and recurring expenses that we haven't even thought about? We forgot about them. And then we look at savings last. We say, okay, if we still aren't balanced, maybe we have to cut some of these savings. Maybe we can't reach those goals quite as quickly. So we do try and come up with a way to make those balance out.
Let's spend some time, just a few minutes, talking about sentimentality. I don't know that people are sentimental about their investments. Perhaps you related some stock from your parents when they when they passed on, and you don't want to sell it because it's a vestige of them. But there are other items in your closet, in your house. Perhaps you have cut glass that your mother had, and you inherited it, and you're not going to ever use it, and it's sitting on a shelf someplace or in a box, Juliet. Oh, people hang on to things for these sentimental reasons, and perhaps they shouldn't, or should they? And if they shouldn't, how do you make that decision? How do you break the bond of sentimentality with things you're never, ever, ever going to use? And what does that say about your brain?
Whew. Yeah, our belongings hold meaning and memory and identity. I kind of keep coming back to that. A lot of times these things are representative of who we were, like, you know, when we got them, or, you know, for example. So releasing them can really feel like a loss to people. So I've mentioned a couple of times about how we something might represent a version of ourselves we're not ready to let go of, for example. So when we release something, it really does mean we kind of have to update the story that we tell ourselves about who we are. And that can feel really threatening. That's some identity confusion, right? So it sometimes there's even deeper layers for people who maybe grew up without, you know, holding on to things can really be a deeply ingrained survival strategy. Their nervous systems learned early, don't let go because you might need it and you might not be able to get it again. So that was really adaptive. So we have to understand individually with compassion, is that something that we can work with someone to help them shift? I've also mentioned grief a few times, right? That loss, grief, belongings can feel sacred if there's a connection there. So what do we do with that is understand what's maybe behind emotionally items and being able to ask something like, does this item belong to my present life or some version of a past one? You know, not like, did it cost a lot? Or what if I need it someday? Because those questions can keep us stuck. But a real question and curiosity about our present lives can help us make a decision about like where we are present day.
This is an obvious point to tip to point to Laurie. I'm going to get to her in a second, but I know Pam, you wanted to jump in here. Go ahead.
Yes, because you mentioned inherited stock. And that is a huge piece for people because there is not just that, you know, you got it from your grandparents or your parents, but there's real physical money attached to that particular item. So it's important to look at that and say, okay, does this particular stock fit with my investment philosophy? Does it fit with what my goals and what I'm going to do? Is it too much of the stock? Is it making me so that I have a whole bunch of this stock and not very much of anything else? Because if you're overweight in that stock, financially, you really should diversify some of that out. And so one question we ask people is, if you were to go out to the market, would you buy this particular stock today? And if they say, yeah, no, I wouldn't buy it, I'm just, you know, keeping it because grandma gave it to me, then that's definitely a more mental item and thought that they have.
So when it comes to physical things, if you're attached to them sentimentally, I want to talk to Laurie in a second about the mechanics of how you make a decision about what should I really hang on to this because this belonged to my great grandmother, or should I let it go? We'll get to that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about mental health, money matters, and physical space at spring cleaning time. How to clear the cobwebs from all of those things with Juliet Kuhn Lee. She's a board-certified licensed therapist with Sun Counseling and Wellness. Pam Horak, your financial mom, is a certified financial planner and owner of Pathfinder Planning, LLC. And Laurie Martin is here, a certified professional organizer and owner of Simplicity Organizer. So we were talking before the break, Laurie, about sentimentality and the role it plays in keeping objects that you perhaps will never use and do not need. How do you suggest people, once you get past the psychological hurdles, how do you suggest people actually tackle it in a practical manner?
Well, I think start by asking yourself, does this item bring me joy? Does it serve a purpose? Am I honoring it? The sentimental part is really difficult to people because we associate it with the person itself, with the relationship. And we put this strong attachment on it. And so it's really important to kind of take a step back. And I'll never forget, it was a changing moment for me when we had worked with an elderly couple who every time we were working with them, they said, I'm saving it for my children. They're going to want this. I'm saving it. And we had a really hard time getting through all the stuff in their house. And within a year, both of them actually passed away. And I'll never forget standing there with the children as the items were coming out of the house, and the children kept saying, I don't have room for this in my house. I can't fit this. I don't want this. This isn't me. And so the years that the parents were holding on to that stuff with determination that the kids were going to want the stuff, and the children stood there at the truck, at the donation truck, and just kept saying, I can't take this. I don't love this, or this doesn't, it was hard for them, but they also knew that they were either going to have to pay for storage for it And that was their signal to let it go. And I remember thinking, we can't take our stuff with us when we pass away. So really recognizing what we use and love is critical in the process, because our life is short, and it shouldn't be bogging us down and holding us back. And so a part of this is really recognizing what you use and love.
And that's a conversation to be had now. Do you want this when I pass? No? Okay. Then I'm not going to hang on to it anymore. I'll let it go. But when it comes to just decluttering, physically decluttering, Laurie, I've heard that you should put things in 3 piles or 5 piles. But in each of those systems, I've heard that you have a keep pile and a let go pile, and I'll think about it pile. How do you approach it?
Yes, it is making the decisions. And a lot of times we have a hard time making the decision because it's in so many different areas of the house. And there was a client who, by the time we finished organizing, there were 13 pairs of swim goggles throughout the house. And she said, we really only need 2 pairs, but I keep buying more. So a lot of times, until we can get it all categorized like items together, we have a hard time letting it go because we don't really know how much is in our house. So part of it is, in the organizing process, is really grouping like items together in your house, pulling all the light bulbs together or all the batteries, whatever it is. That makes it easier to know, are you ready to be able to let that item go? And yes, it is kind of that we call it the simple process. So you're sorting the items, you're identifying them, you're mapping out where they're going to go, you're putting away, you're labeling it, and then you get to enjoy the system that you just created. And the key here is maintaining it, because after you organize it, you've got to be able to maintain the systems. And so you've got to create systems that are really functional and easy for everyone in the family to use.
And what do you do with it? Once you have the throwaway pile, and maybe the pile is to the ceiling, because you've gone through the attic and you've gone through the closets, what do you do with it?
Well, part of it is you actually have an easier time letting something go when you know it's going to a good cause. So we try to identify our clients' belongings with other nonprofits that are really in need of those items. And that feels really good. If you have a family member or a neighbor or someone that you know that could enjoy it, then that makes it that much easier to let it go. And there's so many great organizations that are in need of items. And, you know, calling for, in Charlotte, we can call 311 for bulky trash pickup. There's different, recycling centers, et cetera, that will take your stuff. It's a matter of getting it to there.
Pam, I'm sure you deal with investments and things like that, but you are a financial planner. You don't necessarily make people invest in anything, but get their financial lives in order. At what point, because not everybody can even build a nest egg in this economy. They're living paycheck to paycheck, and they spend every single dime of it every week on groceries and gasoline and rent. But at what point should people consider coming to see someone like you to either get their financial house in order, to find a way to start accumulating a savings account or an investment account? At what point does that occur in their lives?
I feel like that can occur at different points for different people. I see sometimes young professionals who are just starting out. There are really smart, smart people out there coming out of college that don't know anything about finances because it's not taught. And I feel like finances are a just-in-time type of learning. You learn it when you have to. So when they get that first job, they get their first paycheck and they're like, oh my gosh, look at all these taxes that came out. And what is this 401k thing? And why are there 3 insurance things coming out? I didn't think I signed up for that. I don't know what my benefits are. So sometimes people at that point need somebody to come in and help them to set them on the right track so that they're good for going forward. People we see a lot, I like to say they're working families. It is mom and dad who get up in the morning, send their kids to school. They both go to work, come home, pay their bills. And a lot of times their largest assets are their house and their 401k plan. So they don't have a lot of money that can be managed in the asset management world, but they do need a plan because they have a lot of competing priorities. They are trying to figure out, okay, I know I've got to save for retirement because I've been told that this whole time, but I'm still paying my mortgage and I've got to save for my kids. And oh yeah, my parents are giving me all this clutter. I got to figure out what to do with that. So I'm pretty busy over there. And they have all these decisions to make. And I think Julia had mentioned the decision fatigue. It is really, really hard because you do have all these life events going on when you're in that particular space. And so we help our clients kind of cut through that and get to what is the core of what your goals are. What do you want to achieve? What do you want your retirement to look like? And let's map out what the finances are that match that.
And I think it was Juliet who talked a little bit about people's, the way they deal with money may come from the way they were raised. If you were raised in a household that didn't have a lot of money, you might tend to hold on to things, personal items, because you never know when you might need them again. Why buy it again when it's perfectly good to wear now? Is it a good idea to see somebody like you, Pam, to understand your own personal relationship with money, to understand what money means to you and how you think about it?
Yes, it very much is. A lot, I like to say what we do, it's kind of that 80-20 rule. 80% of the planning deals with emotional issues and where you are and what you want to do and your future and your goals. So it's a lot of discussion. Only 20% is really the numbers. And I tell people I don't run the numbers. That's what computers are for. My job is to interpret the numbers and help them figure out what direction they want to go with them.
Juliet, we've heard a lot about the Depression generation, which is slowly passing away, but they held on to a lot of things because they lived through terribly tough times and they didn't know when they would get their next meal in some cases when they were young. And so that's impacted their entire psychological lives. Is there a way to once you come to, if you see somebody like Pam and you understand what your relationship to money is and how you think about money, is there a way to course correct that in your mind to keep up with the realities of what's happening in your life today?
Yeah, we do this with clients a lot too. We're in relationship to everything. So, you know, and the relationship with money starts way before we even have our own bank accounts. We absorb messaging around money and it runs deep. So much about therapy is being able to recognize what beliefs we're holding and carrying that drive certain behaviors without us realizing it. So once we can recognize those beliefs, we can unlearn them and find the safety around unlearning them because of the emotional connection to it as well.
Pam, CNBC says that spring cleaning your finances should be an annual ritual. Is that more important today in what we have to say are uncertain times where we are where the stock market is on a roller coaster, where gasoline prices are going up unexpectedly because of a war, where grocery prices have not really abated very much in the last several years, where everything has become more important, more expensive, and where decisions being made in Washington are affecting everyone? Is it more important than ever to get your house in order?
Absolutely. There are so many pushes and pulls to our income and our outflow that we need to make sure we are taking a look at those. And particularly with gas prices, I've seen this a lot lately, it's cutting into so much of people's day-to-day budget that there's not as much room for some other things that they might want to purchase.
And there is this phrase, don't sweat the small stuff, but it occurs to me that when it comes to money, that's exactly what you should sweat, because going to the coffee shop every day and getting that $5 cup of coffee that should cost maybe a dollar is going to add up over time. The small things add up, right or wrong?
Yes, they do. But you know what I've seen is people who are struggling with debt, it's not the $5 Starbucks that's sinking them. It is the, I bought too much car, I bought too much house. It is the big things that will sink them. It's very important to keep the day-to-day in mind, which is why when we do our budgeting, we set up two accounts, right? There's one account for your income, your savings, that's outflow, and your fixed expenses, that's outflow. So those kind of set the stage for your life and your lifestyle and how you want to live. And then whatever's left over, we put that in an entirely separate checking account. And this is your day-to-day spending. This is money that you can control every single day, and you don't hit all that decision fatigue that you do when it's all mixed together and you have to ask yourself, do I buy groceries or do I pay the electric bill? Because you know that electric bill is going to be paid, the mortgage is going to be paid, the savings are going to happen because you've set that ahead of time. You've already made those decisions. All you have to think about is, I've got $300 left in my account. Do I pay for the kid's soccer uniform? Do I go to the grocery store or do I put gas in the car? Well, maybe I back off on the groceries and gas and make it all work.
Lori, we live in a consumer economy. Americans like stuff. And for a long time, I can remember when stuff was pretty cheap. I got to tell you, clothes were not expensive. You could go out and buy a small kitchen appliance and not think about it in some cases, because everybody wants a toaster oven and everybody wants a microwave and everybody wants if you bake, you got to have a Mixmaster or whatever they call those things. I don't have one, so I don't know.
Been living just fine without it.
But when you start paring down, when you start decluttering your life and you go through your closets and you realize you've got 15 red blouses and six pairs of black pants, and you go through your cupboards in the kitchen and you have a coffee maker, but you also have a cappuccino maker, which you never use. That's me. And things like that. When you start getting rid of stuff, are you going backwards? How do you convince yourself that's all you need? You don't need all this other stuff.
It really starts to reveal itself. It feels really good to let go. And it feels really good when you let it go to someone who's grateful and appreciative for it. And it's sort of like, you know, learning to ride a bike or running a marathon. It is a process, and you got to first start by carving out time on your calendar to do it, because it's organizing is one of those things that you'll just keep pushing off, and it's easy to do. But that's when it slowly starts to build and build, and then you become paralyzed because it's just too much. So when you start to see the spaces open up because you're letting stuff go, there's adrenaline kick, and this is starting to feel really good. And the space in my home and my life and my brain is really starting to free up. And it's incredible to watch the transformation that happens when you let go.
Juliet, you can hear Lori say those words and they may make perfect sense to you, and yet you just can't let go. And perhaps you are surrounded by clutter and with things you don't need and you'd like to get rid of them, but you procrastinated. And, you know, if I don't, give me some tips about, if you fall into the category of being overly cluttered, perhaps bordering on being a hoarder, how can a therapist help you?
I wanted to say, if you notice that clutter in your space or in your head feels connected to something bigger, like grief, anxiety, depression, burnout, do not try to just white knuckle it alone. It's going to fuel some shame. And that's exactly what therapy is for, because a good therapist can help you figure out what that relationship is to your stuff, to your money, whatever it is, help you identify your values so that when you're asking these questions about what to keep, what not to keep, there's a much clearer path about what fits with your present day life.
And we're not talking about vacuuming and dusting here, Lori, but is there a trick to staying organized so that spring cleaning is not overwhelming because it's already pretty much done?
Keeping up with it daily, putting things away daily, letting have a bin in a garage or even in your car as you come across items that you can let them go and keep them moving along, because stuff is always coming in.
Lori Martin is a certified professional organizer, owner of Simplicity Organizers, and executive director of Simplicity Serves, which is an organization offering complimentary organizing services to nonprofits and schools and families in crisis. Pam Horak, your financial mom, certified financial planner, owner of Pathfinder Planning. And Juliet Kuhn Lee, a board certified licensed therapist and owner of Sun Counseling and Wellness. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.